Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. Real sports, real stuff, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening here on Fox Sports 1. It's great to have you in. Joy Taylor is joining me. Ryan Russillo joins me in 30 minutes. Tristan Thompson of the Cavs. Eric Mangini. Chris Sims. Jason McIntyre on a Thursday. Are you working tomorrow?
No, I thought we were all not working.
We're
tomorrow.
All off tomorrow. Oh, okay. So this is it. This is our Friday today.
We're planning on being here tomorrow.
No, we're going all in today on
yes.
today's show. We're really trying
today.
We're
getting our best stuff today.
Yeah, this is it. We're just all of it. Tomorrow, off. So it's great to have you here. So, you know, we live in a world now, and maybe it's always been like this, you know, like recency bias. Like whatever happened last night is the world. And I said this on yesterday's show. I think the Lakers will beat the Blazers in the series, but there are some problems you have to look at. The Clippers are going to beat the Dallas Mavericks in the season. They lost last night. Series is 1-1. Okay. The Clippers lost a playoff game. That means what? Did anybody think they were going to go undefeated through the playoffs? Dallas has the best young player in the NBA. Dallas has two top 25 players. Dallas has a coach in Rick Carlisle who's going to get Hall of Fame votes. Dallas has depth. Dallas finished 11 games above 500. Dallas is good. Folks, KD, Stephen Clay, a dynasty, had 14 playoff losses. The Heatles, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch had double that, 28 playoff losses. With LeBron the best player in the world, Bosch in his prime, and Wade not far from it, they were pushed to 7 games in Miami. These are in series they won by the Celtics, Pacers, and Spurs. The Heatles only had 2 playoff series in 4 years. They swept. It's hard, and now nobody has home court advantage. KD, Steph, and Clay, the first year, they rolled through it. Last 2 years after that, it was a struggle. I mean, go back to Shaq and Kobe. Shaq and Kobe had 3 years where they're viewed as unbeatable. The second title, they were. The year before that, Shaq and Kobe were pushed to a maximum 5 games in the first round. As a number one seed, 5 games at the time was your first round. And they went 5 games. The year after the second year, the third year, they went to 7 games before they got to the finals. This stuff is hard. It's hard to win playoff games. And the bubble's thrown a wrench into it. Because generally these, you know, the Lakers would have home court advantage. And the Bucks would have home court advantage. And the Clippers would have home court advantage. And the advantage is when you're a heavy favorite, and the Clippers are, and the Lakers are, and the Bucks are, is that you need a little juice. I mean, that's always been the thing about the first round. The favorites come in. Thank God you're at home because you know you're supposed to win in about 5 games. And what you need is juice. You need a little help from the crowd, and you don't have it. You got a digital board. And so it's a big advantage to the underdogs. The Bucks, the Clippers, and the Lakers are 1-3. Okay? So it's a huge – this is March Madness. It's even worse than March Madness. Even in the first round, Duke and North Carolina have more fans than Belmont and Coastal Carolina. So this is a huge advantage. I mean, we saw the Suns go 8-0, Portland play in, teams like Memphis and the Nets – without, you know, with not much to work with, had real advantages. Now it's just like you're just playing in a gym. Underdogs got nothing to lose. Pressure's all in the favorites. And by the way, the Clippers are still trying to figure out chemistry. That's A. We all know that. We don't think their chemistry is great. B, Patrick Beverley, who averages about 26, 27 minutes a night for the Clippers, he's a really good player. He didn't play last night. They don't know when they're getting him back. And C, Paul George was bad. And Paul George is not a superstar. He has bad playoff games all the time. So the 3 teams that we think are great, you know, we think are title teams, and I think you can throw Toronto into this, but let's just say Bucks, Lakers, Clippers. They're 1-3. And people forget this. If you go to the KD, the last year before KD got hurt, in Golden State, the second year. The third year, This is the KD, Steph, Clay, Draymond Warriors. They were pushed to six games in the first round by these Clippers, and Kawhi wasn't there yet, and Paul George wasn't there yet. That's a dynasty. And again, the Heatles had 28 playoff losses. They were pushed to seven games three times in the years they won the championship. So this is, you got no home court advantage, big advantage, obviously, to the underdogs. Because the favorites in playoff series in the first round have always needed juice. They need something to lift them up. The underdogs don't. They're being told they have no chance. They don't need the juice. They're being told they have no chance to win the series. They got the juice. They got the chip on their shoulder. Favorites in the first round are sleepwalking through this thing. Milwaukee's defense now is bad. The Lakers haven't looked really energized in like 2 weeks. And last night, the Clippers without Patrick Beverley, off night for Paul George, just didn't have it. So this is great news. It's one of these that you'd think, because I love Tua, it would be bad news. This is actually great news. Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to start for the Miami Dolphins. This is great news for Tua. This is a really, really bad year to start as a rookie quarterback. And I want you to think about this. We would all admit Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson look like superstars. I mean, you're talking two MVPs. One of them you consider the best quarterback ever. One of them was just voted Lamar Jackson best player in the NFL by team, by players, NFL.com. They weren't ready to start year one. Now, just think about this. Contextualize this. They had great head coaches, Andy Reid, John Harbaugh. They had very good rosters. Miami doesn't. They had preseason. They had OTAs. They had stability in the franchise. Baltimore's rock-solid ownership front office. Kansas City, rock-solid ownership front office. And Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, with all of those additives, were not ready to play. Joe Burrow is going to get mauled. Cincinnati has none of that, and Miami has very little of that. Miami now has a second-year head coach, a new offensive coordinator. They're rebuilding their O-line, and two of their wide receivers opted out. This is not good. Now, take Kyler Murray. I think most of us, I certainly look at Kyler Murray, and I think he had a very successful rookie year. He was 5-10-1. And they brought in a coach, Cliff Kingsbury, who used Kyler Murray's high school and college offense. They just brought it over. He was 5-10-1, and we went, oh, it was pretty successful. But Kyler Murray, who's more athletic, significantly more athletic than Tua, was getting sacked five times a game his rookie year in the first month. I think he ended up getting sacked 50 times. And he has escapability, much better than Tua. And all those shots, Tua doesn't have to take any of them. Because Arizona's O-line is a lot like Miami's today. Rebuilding. Not great. Not top 10 in the league. So this is great news. And by the way, I love Miami's direction. Joy and I have said this a thousand times. I have them at 7-9 this year in a so-so division where I think New England's got its worst team in 20 years. The Jets are a mess. Buffalo's good but limited at quarterback. I have them at 7-9. Fox Bet has their over-under at 6.5. People in the NFL love where Miami's going. The Vegas guys, the wise guys, have them at 6.5. And I'll give you another. And I love them, and I have them at 7-9. Yesterday I talked, it'll be on my Saturday podcast, I talked to a buddy, Chad Millman, who's in the gaming industry, sports gambling. And I asked him one of my questions. I've already taped it. It's on Saturday. I said, the smart guys, the wise guys, like, what is their number one over-under bet in the NFL? And he said, it's the Cincinnati Bengals under 5.5 wins. The smartest guys in Vegas are pounding bet Cincinnati wins fewer than 5 games. Why? This is an easy one. No OTAs, no preseason, tough division, rebuilding roster, no stability in the franchise historically. This is a sounds like bad news, great news for Tua. Now, I will say this. There is a part of the Miami schedule, and I did this with Lamar Jackson. Remember when I predicted he would start game 11 first year? There is a part of the schedule where Tua could come in. It's a Week 9, when they play Arizona, Jets by Jets, Bengals. Now, that, to me, 2 months in, offensive line coming together, new offensive coordinator, you work with him. That can be your preseason. The 8 weeks, you sit on the sidelines, play sparingly, watch Fitzpatrick take the hits. Week 9 is going to be my prediction. I predicted Lamar Jackson week 11. Week 9, Tua starts for the Miami Dolphins at Arizona, Jets by Jets Bengals. That's the time. It is not now. All right, coming up next, Paul George was bad. Of course he was, and I'll explain that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Good to have you in. Casper.com, code HERD. Dream bedroom. Sheets, duvets, all that stuff. Ryan Russillo joins me in 10 minutes. Tristan Thompson next hour. Great to have you in on a Thursday. So, everybody last night, Clippers lost to the Mavs. Mavs are a good team, 11 over 500. Luka, best young star in the game. Dallas a real team. By the way, Dallas just set this year a record, league history, the most efficient offense ever. It's like a real – you're not sweeping Dallas. They're a real team. But Paul George wasn't good last night, and he's up and down as a playoff guy. So the first thing that needs to be said is how your second best player plays in the playoffs matters. It's not an excuse. It's a reason. Look at the Lakers. Anthony Davis disappeared against Portland in the fourth. They lost. Milwaukee, Chris Middleton was awful. They lost to Orlando. The Clippers, Paul George last night had a stinker. They lost. By the way, Porzingis ejected Dallas game one. They lost. Like your second best player. We stare at stars in the NBA. And I get it. It's a star-driven league. But how your second player performs is crucial in these games. You can't kill. Even Dame needed Melo to hit shots, Nurkic and CJ McCollum to be big the other night. You can't carry a team in this sport anymore. It's too many good players. The second thing is there is a massive gap between, even if they're both Hall of Famers, and LeBron and AD are, and Pippen and MJ were, there's a massive gap between stars and the second best star on a team. I mean, LeBron this year was great in the fourth. AD all year disappeared in the fourth. They'll both be Hall of Famers. Kawhi is Mr. Clutch. Paul George, historically, is never clutch. That's the knock on him. Giannis is a dominant, consistent MVP. Chris Middleton disappears. Games, halves. The gap between the best player on a team and the second best. I mean, I love Chris Bosh in his prime, but the gap between LeBron and Wade was massive. I mean, Chris Bosh once had a playoff game in Miami. He didn't score a point. So, and what happens in these playoffs, you rely on that second best guy, and sometimes second best guys disappear. That's why they're second best guys. Big gap. I mean, a prime example, the best Robin to a Batman in league history, many people believe is Pippen to MJ. Now you can go back in annals of basketball and argue, but for a long time, that was the argument. That's the best Robin to a Batman ever. The minute MJ went to baseball, they gave the team to Pippen. By the beginning of year two, Scotty was unraveling. DUI, gun charge, wouldn't come off the bench, had coaching issues with... By year two, he was unraveling. And Scotty's a Hall of Famer, one of the best slashers of all time. But the reality of Jordan is Jordan got tackled for 6 years before he won a title, 6 or 7. Jordan was literally the entire league. He carried the league. He carried Chicago. He carried his teammates. He carried his GM. He carried his owner. And Jordan handled it. Pippen by year two, the unraveling. That is the gap. So when Paul George struggles, it's not an excuse. It's a reason. The number two guy often is not close to the number one guy. And even when they're Hall of Famers, Paul George is going to get Hall of Fame votes. AD is going to be a Hall of Famer. So, Scottie Pippen, Hall of Famer. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line.
It's also why I said LeBron can't become Mr. Super Passer in this series. LeBron, we're going to need 36. Because AD, I can't trust late, and I don't know if Kyle Kuzma delivers ever. So when LeBron goes into the super passer, great teammate guy, it's like, no, dude. I need 36 from you regularly in these playoffs to win.
I mean, it sounds nice that he's breaking all these records and
handing
having all
it
these
off
assists. And he's one of the greatest I mean, everyone's going to, you know, give the nod to Magic, obviously.
Oh,
but
no, no, LeBron's
he's right
the...
there with the greatest passers in the history of the league.
Absolutely is.
But this is not the time.
This is the time to score a lot.
So earlier this month, when LeBron was asked about the Lakers' struggles in the bubble, he said there were some things happening behind the scenes that he didn't want to talk about.
Wow.
That brought up a lot of speculation that there's tension within the locker room.
What?
But LeBron is assuring the team's fans that there's nothing to worry about.
Hmm.
One thing about our team, we have zero lack of team chemistry and camaraderie. That's the one thing that our team will always strive and always be about. Our group has been probably as close as ever before because of the situation, even more since we're here. So, you know, Lake Show, Laker Nation, don't worry about that. It has nothing to do with the ball club. We're great.
So no, the chemistry is good. It's just the dependability is not great.
They may have really suffered from the league being shut down more than any other team.
You got thrown together this year. New coaches, new players.
But they
new
were roster. Rolling.
Yeah.
And now they're in a situation. And like I'm telling you, I keep hearing these little mentions from LeBron, and then you heard it from Giannis. This was my fear about the bubble going in. Now, initially, our apprehension was for, you know, the young single guys, but for the most part, there's been no problems.
Yeah.
Now it's really looking like the guys who have families and are used to, everyone's certainly not used to a bubble lifestyle, but, you know, that had a lot more going on and flexibility, and they're not at home playing video games by themselves all day, are really struggling in the bubble right
now.
Well,
when you're young and you don't have kids and you don't have a family, you kind of live, you take care of you all day. So
Right. Probably
the young guys in the bubble are like, hey, listen, man, I play, I nap, I eat, I video game it, I listen to some music.
Yeah, and aside from a social life, like they haven't been around their teammates or playing basketball in months. Like this is just a long extended basketball AAU tournament.
But if you have kids and they have a crisis at school, and I mean, it's just different. If I don't talk to my daughter every other day, I'm sad. Like I got when you have kids and they're in school and they're going through this pandemic, a lot of these older players are having a lot more trouble than young kids.
It's a lot of pressure. LeBron keeps talking about it. I don't think that it is a chemistry issue. I think this is really a very unique psychological situation for a lot of people, and it's wearing. It's hard. There is no home court advantage, so you don't have your fans when whatever you're going through at home to completely distract you the second that you walk into the arena. Like it's a completely different situation. So according to Fox Bet, the odds before game one for the Lakers to beat the Blazers were -555. They're now -225. The Blazers +170. I still think the Lakers are going to win this series.
But nobody thought it was going to be easy. It's a
poor
point.
Well, you know what? I think we got a little bit spoiled, and you were just talking about this with the Clippers and the Mavs. We got a little spoiled with the first round series being so easy, right? That we barely even paid attention to the first round series.
Well, you and I would really go into the NBA the second round.
Right.
The first round, like LeBron went years without losing a game.
Right. Right. And so maybe it would be a gentleman's sweep, right?
Right.
But this is going to be different this year.
Yep.
It's a completely different environment.
No home court advantage, and the favorites have no juice, which favorites need in the first round because they're sleepwalking through it.
Hey, guys, enjoy the extra basketball games.
Yeah.
We haven't had those in a while and haven't had them in the first round in a long time. So the Mavericks obviously got a big win over the Clippers in Game 2 last night. And even though Luka said it felt amazing to get his first playoff victory, he's focused on what the team is going to do next.
Just got three left. And I think we can fight for it. I mean, any series we're gonna believe that we can win for sure. If you don't believe it, you're not supposed to be here. So you gotta believe it.
Luka is
absurd.
He is a gift.
Do you know
watch.
He had one bad game all year? I looked it up this morning. He had one stinker against Denver. The guy is one of the six players in the league that I get the exact same performance every night. He's 21.
He's incredible. He passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most points through his first two career playoff games yesterday. So Luka had 70 in his first two. Kareem had 69. Wilt 63. LeBron 58. Jordan 53.
God.
So that should tell you kind of the air that he's in at this point in his career. He had 28 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists. It was a bad game for the Clippers overall. A lot of fouls in that game. I mean, it was getting a little ridiculous in the fourth quarter. Like, let them play a little bit.
Yeah, people are bagging. I my only knock on NBA officiating, because I think it's fine, is over officiating. I'm kind of like, let the dudes play.
No. I don't think the officiating has been bad, but it just feels like it's like every other possession is a call. Like, let them play a little bit. I mean, and maybe that is a little bit to the crowd. You don't have the boos and the energy from the crowd that, will sway officials sometimes.
Yeah.
So maybe that's playing a part in it. But overall, great game and good job out of the Mavs. I still think Clippers win this series as well. But it's nice to have a little competition. Not a whole lot of competition going on in the Sixers-Celtics series, though. The Sixers lost an ugly game to the Celtics, 128-101, and Brett Brown admitted his team was a little outmatched in game two.
I think it got deflating when their shot makers went bananas, and I'm not gonna scold their effort. I think that you got to shake their hands to the Celtics. They made shots, and we had a hard time dealing with that.
Well, Jason Tatum had a playoff career high 33 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Kemba Walker had 22. Jaylen Brown had 20. Joel Embiid had 34 and 10 rebounds. No one else on the team scored more than 18 points.
Yeah, I'm over this. Like, it can't. I'll go back to my argument. Any relationship that is this hard, this many years in, is not going to work.
I mean, I'm with you. This is why I don't like the programming of tanking, because you, for so long, you're building your team to lose, and then all of a sudden you get the players that you think can win, and you've been teaching these young players that it's okay to lose, and all of a sudden you think you're just going to flip a switch and now they're winners. That doesn't work. Veteran teams don't do that. They take it easy. They take their foot off the gas, but they're still moving forward. So I don't know. I'm over the process too. I feel bad for Joel Embiid though. Like, he is a competitor. You see him on the sideline, like, he's upset, and I feel for him. It's not a good situation for him to be in.
You can get a lot for him. Simmons and Embiid don't work. I think you can get more for Embiid than Simmons, but I would keep Simmons for a lot of different reasons, the way the game is played now. But you can get a lot for Embiid. Yeah, I'd break it up, and I'd go, somebody out there in this world, he's one of the most skilled big men in the history of the sport. He's got a little Shaq.
No, he's an incredible
poor
player.
Shaq put weight on.
I mean, it's a little unfair to evaluate them, obviously, not having Ben Simmons out there, but, I mean, it should not be this. It shouldn't be this bad.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just done with it.
Yeah.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Works for the Ringer. He's my buddy Ryan Russillo, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Okay, it's recency bias. Let's freak out. Clippers lost. And I just watched it and I thought, Dallas is pretty good. Carlisle's probably going to get Hall of Fame votes. Luka's sick. Porzingis. And, by the way, they just set a record for NBA offensive efficiency. And Joy and I were talking about this, Ryan. These underdog teams, they don't have to go on the road to start a series. They're playing. I mean, I watched last night and I'm like, this is just Dallas is playing with. I mean, it looked like they're just playing with house money. Last night, they looked like a better team, right?
Yeah, this whole concept that the worst teams were going to be better than the better teams just because it was a bubble, it was hard for me to buy into. I'm like, why am I going to start picking the teams that aren't as good just because it's neutral? And yet what we've seen with the one seeds losing and then the Clippers splitting these first two, but we knew this about Dallas. Dallas is arguably, statistically at least, one of the best historical offenses we've ever seen. And they were one of the worst closing teams in recent NBA history. They had this number where they had lost like 7 games when they were up in the last minute.
Yes.
It was one of the worst numbers we'd seen in a couple decades. But what Luka does to defenders is already scary. I don't know what to do with him right now. Think about this Clippers team that has Beverly when they're healthy and then, of course, Kawhi and Paul George. Luka has gotten to switches against any of these players. He had a play in game one where he drove right into Kawhi's chest and Kawhi bounced off of Luka. And I get that Luka's bigger, but his handle, the tightness of it, his understanding of angles at such a young age, he basically has moments where he goes, all right, I'm just going to drive on you this entire time. And by the way, at 6'9", 6'8", I have the vision to kick it out to shooters. So they play a little bit like Houston, but he's so good on these drives that we're talking about a really good defensive Clippers team with great individual defenders that are lost with him.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you look at, I was just talking about, there's such a gap. Even Pippen was the best Robin ever, and the minute they gave him the franchise for 2 years, by year two, emotionally he unraveled. The pressure of being the number one. I mean, LeBron was great in the fourth quarter this year. AD was not. And I look at Paul George and I think to myself, he's a good player, but what Paul did last night is what Paul does one out of three playoff games. Like, this is why Kawhi has to score 34 for them to win the title, right? This is why LeBron can't be super passer like he was the other night. Like, we're all like, oh, LeBron's such a great visionary. Yeah, that's great, but I need 34 from you. So I watch Paul George and I'm like, this is why the Clippers can't roll through every series. Paul gives you this every third playoff game, and since I've been watching him.
Look, Paul George is, we know he's a max guy. You'd all want him on your team. If you're running a team, you're like, hey, we can get Paul George. It's incredible. I mean, think about it. The Lakers thought they had him. Oklahoma City ends up with him. They were thrilled to have him. And then the Clippers are like, we're going to give you a million draft picks for him. But it's very simple with Paul George. And I think some of these guys that are below that first tier, which is a very small group of guys that bring you every single night. If Paul George gets 30 in a playoff game, I'm not surprised. But he gets 13, I'm not surprised. He had zero in the first half. He woke up a little bit later on, but at that point, you're like, okay, well, where have you been? I understood he had foul trouble, but I went through it. Kevin Durant, in 139 playoff games, has had eight real games below 20 points, okay? Think about that. There's like two where he was hurt, but there's eight games where he didn't get to 20 out of 139. Paul George, not counting the first three playoff series of his career where he just wasn't a primary guy at all, almost a third of his playoff games – end up being a sub 20 guy. So look, we understand how talented he is, but this thing happens with announcers where the secondary guy goes off. They're like, oh, he doesn't get enough credit. He doesn't get enough credit. Well, he doesn't get enough credit because he has games like in game two where you're like, is Paul George out there? Or are they running this through Marcus Morris tonight?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Joy and I have talked about this, and this isn't obviously verified, but it's like the young players who are single, no kids, they go to this bubble, and they're like,
I can't wait for this. Never mind.
Here we go. So the young guys are like, I ball, I nap, I eat, I play Xbox, I have fun. The old guys... kids, you don't have those yet. Wait till you have kids and you're sitting around all night. You don't talk to your – and then they have marriages. So LeBron and Giannis, they keep talking about all this. They're older guys. They've been in the league 7-8 years. And Luka, Ja Morant, Michael Porter Jr., they're just – you know, is there something about – let's just take Milwaukee. The mood, the body language, what's wrong with Milwaukee? They're not the same team right now.
I'd have to be down there to know. You know, those are the things that we sort of hear about after the fact. You're like, hey, this team really doesn't get along. Because I was asking, we had Seth Curry on the podcast, and I go, do you hang out with other teams? He's like, well, our team's pretty tight. He's like, we don't really hang out with different guys. But you have to imagine how weird that dynamic would be. But like, why is Dave hanging out with the Orlando Magic? And I'm just saying, you know what I mean? I think what does happen in these series is that Milwaukee goes in with a lot of expectations about themselves because they were a dominant statistical team this year,
right,
with how they were beating on teams. And Orlando won 33 games. So, you know, Orlando took advantage of a few things. Middleton had another one of those kind of off, you know, Paul George-like games. Milwaukee has this tendency to let you shoot against them, which is kind of weird for a team that you feel pretty good about defensively. But as far as body language, the whole thing, like, I've got to see a second game before I'm ready to really start worrying about Milwaukee, because I can't fathom that an Orlando team that wasn't going to get to 500 this year is going to be one of the great point differential teams we've ever seen in the regular season.
But we talked about this yesterday. We said Giannis plays great with a lead and downhill. It's Lamar Jackson. But when Lamar trailed against Tennessee just by 10 points in the third quarter, you're like, uh-oh, this is trouble. Even the Baltimore staff, you could tell from their playing call. Mahomes is down 24-0. You're like, yeah, let's just, you know, get it together. It'll be fine. Giannis, this is why I can't just anoint Giannis as the next face of the league. When he gets behind, Ryan, he's not as scary. He's still good, but he's not as scary. Can we acknowledge that LeBron is still, and Kawhi are kind of a gap above Giannis in that, behind or not, I feel like LeBron and Kawhi, their game isn't marginalized.
Well, whenever we do this with any of these guys that are trying to be the top guy in the league, yeah, we got to see it. We got to see more than blowing a 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Raptors, because that's all we have right now. That's Giannis's biggest accomplishment. But as far as comparing to, like, if the default here is that I have to argue he's Pat Mahomes, I'm already going to lose the argument because we don't have anything like that. So part of the reason I think you may think, and I'm not sure that I agree with you on that one, is that they beat teams so bad this year. That's why I keep getting that back to the point differential. Giannis was only playing like 30 minutes a night. I mean, it's crazy to think somebody this young who's an MVP and the whole system was like, we don't need to play him this much. I mean, you could knock him and say, well, you know, if they're down and he's not a great shooter, is that a flaw? But you could use the same argument against Steph Curry when you go, well, if the shot's not falling, Steph in a tight playoff game can't always get you to the rim and get you an easier bucket. And you're like, I don't know, man. I would say this. The bigger issue is that Giannis has had Middleton's let him down, Bledsoe's let him down. And they are a really good defensive team that does space out everybody on offense. And the argument against Milwaukee would be, okay, you do only two things. I mean, Barkley was talking about the other night. It's Giannis layups or it's kick out threes, and your number one guy doesn't shoot enough. But it's still the Orlando Magic. And I think as weird as that first game was, I'm sorry. Like I can't believe the Magic are going to really end up making this like a thing where we're saying, are we writing off Milwaukee this soon?
So I don't want to get into your personal life, but I'm sure you've had a lot of girlfriends, and I always have a theory on this. If you're going to therapy in year seven, it's just too hard. But by year seven, if you can't come to – okay, so I look at the Sixers.
What are you talking about right now? Are you saying you would be dating somebody and not married and in therapy in year seven? Because then you should have gone to therapy way before that. Sorry.
I'm saying is when relationships are right, it works pretty quickly. I'm so over the Sixers. God, I'm just so over it. I mean, at some point, can you solve the Embiid-Simmons issue right here on our show today? Because I'm done with it.
No, and it used to be worse. When you look at the on-court, off-court with those guys. And this is – I knew this was going to happen. There's a couple teams that are facing real, and I would say therapy-type issues. But they're just going to say, hey – like, there's people right now staying in the relationship because of a pandemic. And I would imagine the Sixers may stay in some of these relationships because they're going to go – that was the bubble, you know, and hey, Ben was hurt.
Yeah.
I think the first thing would be you would give another coach a chance here. I know everybody, and I've brought it up before. I just think, unfortunately, for Simmons and Embiid, their skill set, the things that they're both good at, they're mismatched with kind of the worst version of the other guy, where Simmons would probably be better playing more in a Giannis-type style where he can drive and he can kick out to everybody instead of having maybe one of the best centers we've ever seen talent-wise kind of standing in his way. The numbers did get a little bit better with those two, but I'll always kind of challenge everybody with this. You have to know what's coming back that makes sense, because we get real worked up about break it up. Okay, for what though? What transaction exists out there where I split up Embiid and Simmons and I actually like what we're getting back, where we feel like we're better? Because the other scary thing for the Sixers right now is they've got two of the worst contracts in the league with Harris and Horford.
Yes.
And I, like, Brett Brown, none of these coaches want to get on these guys anymore. We know that. The guys we grew up watching, they would lay into their guys after game two. But here come the Sixers down 25 in the fourth quarter being like, all right, guys, full court press, Hoosier style. And they give up back-to-back offensive rebounds the first two possessions. And you go, hey, it's not just that the other team's lighting it up. Your effort level is just not locked in. And I think you're right in that it's a very frustrated group. And I myself am kind of sick of talking about it.
Okay, a minute left, Ryan. AD disappearing act in the fourth quarter. Is it psychological? Is it the way LeBron plays? It's game two tonight. Like, you explain AD's fourth quarter disappearing act.
Sometimes I think it's the way they trap him defensively, and he's just a really smart player, and he plays off the trap. But then sometimes it's like, hey, we need you to do this. Two real quick things. I'm not ready to put AD in this group of the number twos that aren't as good. I know you are. I know you've been kind of down on him. I listen enough to the show that you're not an AD guy. He's 30-12 in 14 playoff games. Some of the numbers he put up with the Pelicans, yes, they didn't do a lot, but they are monster, monster numbers. So I'm not ready to put him in as this playoff guy that's super inconsistent because the numbers are incredible. But we saw about the last 4 minutes of game one, the game is in the balance against Portland. What did they do? They went small. They went small with Anthony Davis. And if that's what you're telling me, if Vogel's telling me as a coach that I kind of like this lineup better, then what are we screwing around with?
Yeah.
Like, enough of the center charade, especially against a guy like Hassan Whiteside or Jokic, not Jokic, Nurkic. Get him out of there. Have Davis just move around and set up in some different spots. I know you've been on this big fourth quarter thing, but I'm just not there enough with Davis to start worrying about him not being able to be a good Robin.
By the way, you're not the only person that listens to this show. America needs me for honest takes, Russillo.
Sports therapist over here. I mean, we hit on What's going on with you lately? a lot of counseling, a lot of references. You all right?
I'm great, by the way. Everything's good.
I know you are. Yeah, okay, good.
The Ringer, Ryan Russillo. Good seeing you, buddy. Good podcast.
Thank you. Great podcast,
the Ryan Russillo podcast. Coming up next, I actually have sympathy from a football team in Ohio. I really do. I totally get their pain. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Oh, welcome back. So, people in Ohio think I don't like their football teams, the Browns, a horrible franchise. I call them out. They think it's hating. I think it's honesty and accuracy. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow's going to be awful this year. It's not his fault. It's just a bad year to have to start for a bad franchise in a brutally tough division. I think the Browns, the Steelers, and the Ravens, I don't think there's a division in football that's got better front sevens than those three combined. It's just unbelievable. Baltimore's and Pittsburgh's could be the best in the league, 1 and 2. It's just sick. Burrow's going to be over his skis. But I do get the Buckeyes' frustration in the Big Ten not playing. The Bengals are playing in Ohio. The Browns are playing in Ohio. The Cincinnati Bearcats collegiately are playing in Ohio. They're having high school football in Ohio. People will play during Thanksgiving in their backyard in Ohio, in parks, in Ohio State. The best historic football franchise in the state can't play. I get it. I get the anger. I get the frustration. Proximity matters. You know, it's different. You know, I've always said this. If my brother-in-law or something did much better than me professionally, it's one thing if he lives in another state. What if he was my neighbor? Oh, he'd be driving in with a new sports car again, and they're going on another vacation. Proximity matters. Ohio State's looking around. Everybody right around him is playing in their own state, and they're the big dogs. It's frustrating. I get it. Proximity. You know, it's like when you're a kid and all the kids are playing outside, you look out your window and your mom is mad at you. You're grounded and you can't go play with the kids, but you can see them all playing on a sunny day in the summer. I feel bad for Ohio State. Also, they don't care about outside of Michigan. They don't see themselves really as a Big Ten team. Ohio State fans see themselves as Alabama, and they see themselves as Clemson and Notre Dame. They're a national player, Georgia, LSU, outside of Michigan. And Michigan's not really at their level as a national title contender. Ohio State sees itself. I mean, the conversation Ohio State fan has is not about beating Wisconsin. They do that almost every year. It's about beating Alabama and beating Clemson. That's how, you know, Oklahoma. That's how they view themselves. So those guys are all playing. Oklahoma's playing, and Clemson's playing, and Bama's playing, and Georgia's playing, and Notre Dame is playing, and they're not playing. So I get it. Like, this is one of those times I get the anger and resentment of the Ohio State players. Their fans, everybody in their state's playing, including high school. Everybody's playing. High school guys don't get paid. High school guys don't have probably the lung capacity of a great college player. I mean, I get it. This is such an abnormal year in that, hockey and the NBA are playing in a bubble. UFC rented an island. Baseball, endless season, down to 60 games. Part of me thinks, Could one of these big corporations lighten up for a second? Could the Big Ten say, go play. Go join the Big 12 for a year. I mean, it's an abnormal year. Well, contractually, give me a break. We're going to look at small print. Ohio State's a football power. It is a massive disadvantage we're dealing now, the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, the Big 10, they all compete against each other for the same great high school players. And this morning, all the rivals to Ohio State can say, they're not committed, man. That conference is, they're not really committed in it. And it probably cost them some recruits. So this is one of those, I get the angry fan. Usually the angry fan is delusional, doesn't have an argument. I get Ohio State's anger. And I do wonder, and again, it's far more complicated than me, a sports guy, talking about it on the air. But I do think, could the Big Ten lighten up? And listen, let's say Ohio State was allowed to go play and they joined a conference. And they broke the Big Ten contract. By the way, Ohio State could go independent tomorrow and succeed. If Illinois went independent, program's done. Nobody cares. Nobody cares in Illinois. But if Ohio State went independent, hell, BYU makes it as an independent. Navy. So Ohio State could go independent in football, just say, we'll make a schedule up every year and do just fine. I think the Big Ten, without Ohio State, doesn't have a single national player. Not once. Like the Pac-12 right now, if USC is down, they don't have a single national contender on an annual basis. So I get it. I think the Big Ten could lighten up, understand the value Ohio State brings to the conference nationally. the only national, like year after year, every year Ohio State's in the top four or five, they can win a title. Wisconsin's not. Just a great, Wisconsin's great. It's a great Big Ten football power. It's not a great national power. It's a good program. So, but, you know, it's complicated. You have contracts. You know, everybody wants to own everybody. And I would consider, if I ran the Big Ten, I would consider saying, go schedule some games. Keep your name out there. Keep playing. Hanging at home, get inspired. Lowe's.com. Do-it-yourself projects. Never been a year you're at home more. That's where Lowe's comes in. Do-it-yourself projects. Hour two coming up next.